So the way we should be pronouncing the language is Abenaki?
Correct, Abenaki.
Okay. And so why do people so often say Abenaki or Abnaki?
It's just the character in this story, and is often, I think people say Massasoit. It means chief. It's Massasoit. Correctly pronounced words, the emphasis, if there's more than four syllables, falls on the third syllable from the end of the word. So that's just the intonational pattern of the language. And it's really clearly illustrated in Abenaki because there are four syllables. So we go three syllables back and we have Aben and then Aki. Pului Hidit would be another word like two that they escaped. Pului Hidit. And if we were to mispronounce, we get Abenaki. That's just pronouncing it more anglicized. And I think we're all used to doing that. And so we do it and it's acceptable. Many Abenaki people call themselves Abenaki. It's a real telltale sign of someone is a speaker of the language. All the people I have ever met who were speakers of the language, most of them are elderly, will all always say consistently that they are Abenaki. Huh. In the same family, a generation later, who don't speak, will say they're Abenaki. So I think it's just a carryover from having fluency and recognizing that there's a different pattern, a different way of speech.
Does it bother you when people say Abenaki?
Not at all.
So tell me then, did you grow up speaking Abenaki in your home?
I grew up hearing the language. My father was very, very involved in really kind of tracing and finding as much as he could about our own family. And he was really focused on stories. He published his first book of Abenaki stories in the late 1970s. And it took him many places. We had many many different speakers in our lives, Maurice Dennis and others, who he learned many stories from. So I've always heard it. My father was always trying to use it. He used it in his books, but he wasn't a first language speaker. So neither was I. It wasn't until I was 18 or 19 that I started doing classes, and then I got fully dedicated and went up and lived at Odonak in Quebec for several years, almost a decade on and off. And really worked not only to learn, but I was immediately helping teach with Cecile Wawenolet, who was the teacher there. At that time, she was about 88 when I met her. She lived to be 98 and died in 2006. And she was just an incredible woman. And her goal was to make sure the language continued. And I'm doing now that same work with her son, Elie Joubert, who is one of our last fluent speakers. He's also from the community of Odonak. There are very few. Luckily, I've learned what I've learned, and I do everything I can to try and get more people interested and involved and eager to learn it as well.
You say one of very few speakers, so you speak the language. You've raised your two children, I understand, to speak the language.
Yes.
But
yes.
You only know a couple other people who actually speak it?
Yeah, I know a few people up on the reserve. The problem is pretty much every year now we lose people because those who were speakers when I started were already in their 70s and 80s. The language was still paramount and spoken by pretty much everyone within the Odonak community as well as several communities throughout New England up until around the 1950s, right after World War II. It seemed there was a big shift. Television and other things came in and people really started being more influenced by the dominant culture, and we saw the language's use diminish a lot. So every year, people, I can't keep track of everybody, but I'm always hearing about people who pass who I knew of as speakers. I only have direct contact with a couple at this point. And Elie, I'm with as much as I can. I'm missing him now because I'm here in South Africa. We're usually together at least once or twice a month doing an immersion camp somewhere.
Wow. Can you describe the structure of grammar and the structure of the language a little bit?
Yeah. Unlike English, where we have a lot of little words like the and is and a, instead we have single words that will often come together to form an entire sentence. So for example, I could say something like he went to see his friend. We take several words to say that in English, and in Abenaki I just say inami honk. That one has gone to see, I've gone to see, or unami ha, he has gone to see. So a whole expression can be reflected in one or two words, a whole sentence, usually just two words. Those words, though, contain within them a lot of relationships that we don't even worry about. in English, one of the main things is just the idea of gender being animate and inanimate. So if I were to say that he saw a man, I would use a different verb than if I were to say he saw something considered inanimate or not alive. So I would say, una miha, he saw someone, and I'd say, una mito, he saw something, which I think is really fascinating in the language, that we're always keeping track of the world, where in English we say he or she pretty much just of maybe our some of our animals, but definitely other humans. In Abenaki, we really speak of he or she about almost half of the world. We see it as having spirit or being considered animate. And the other half, being considered inanimate, much of which may have at one time been animate, but died, or in the case of a tree, been cut down. Even a mountain that has been, all the trees have been cut back would then become inanimate. So we see there's an ability to shift between the animate and inanimate case.
So you were comparing it a little bit to gender, but are words also gendered, or is it that words are either animate, things and the words that are associated with them are animate or inanimate, and that sort of takes the place of what we use as gender in English?
Exactly. Yeah, it is very similar to how we use gender in English. So the animate and inanimate cases are often called the gender of Algonquin. Algonquin gender is animate and inanimate. In fact, male and female don't figure in so much so that if I were to say he, I would equally be saying she. So I could say nia, me, kia, you, agma, he, or she. They're combined. He and she is combined. There's absolutely no recognition of gender.
Oh, interesting. Wow. And so everything is either animate or inanimate, and sometimes it shifts depending on the state of the actual thing.
That's correct. If something were to die, if a person were to die, then they'd obviously be spoken of in an inanimate way.
Wow. So, Jesse, you mentioned that you do these immersion language camps. Who comes to them? Who's trying to learn the language?
Many people who are really interested in their own native ancestry, parts of different Abenaki communities across New England, as well as people who aren't connected at all, who are just really interested in language, who are interested in learning the language or helping us to preserve the language. When we all come together, though, we always say we're not only preserving the language, we're really creating a new network of relations, because the community, one of the strongest things about a community, I think, is when we have a shared goal. We're all working for something similar, and in this case, something that really is in desperate need of help. So we're open to everyone, and we see just a real cross-section. I mean, people from communities all over. We have people from other native communities as well. I have friends who are studying other native languages, which are really similar to ours, and they come into our group. And likewise, we'll often travel and try and get ideas and in other circles that are similar, other Eastern Algonquin languages, for example. Like, we often travel to Maine and work with the Penobscot, work with the Muncie and the Mohegan, and others who are in a really similar boat. In fact, most native languages at this point are unfortunately in danger of being lost if some major revitalization efforts aren't happening.
Do you have any hope for Abenaki?
I have hope only in my own control. I mean, in what I can control, I know that I will continue to speak it. I speak it to my kids all the time. I kid around, and my wife is so supportive. She's immersed every day in the language to the point that she's come to understand it and answer the kids sometimes in a language that which they get such a kick out of. But I say they're my first captive audience. I've taught the language for 20 plus years, and one of the hardest things is definitely that people stick with it for a while, and then sometimes life gets in the way and they move on. And it's definitely gotta, if you make a real commitment to it, though, you can become fluent. I think the most important thing, though, is to have it in the home and have it in your life and have it as a part of everything you do. If you want to speak a language, the trick is to speak the language as much as possible. I think as long as we have that little nest that we have, and we try and continue to make it grow, there is some hope. And I think another thing that lasts much longer than me are the things I can leave behind. I mentioned my father. He's been involved in literature, and I've published 5 books. Each of those books are both in Abenaki and English. I produce a radio show in the language. and I create music in the language. I'm working on this film and using the language. So I think all of these forms of media are wonderful, and they'll live beyond me and hopefully allow others who I don't get to work with to also, you know, have better access than I was able to have to the language. But the most important thing is just being eager and just using it. That is the most important thing.
And why is it important to preserve the language? What do you think is lost when a language is lost?
It's much, much more than just words. For one, you really can't ever speak unless you understand the concepts behind which the thoughts are processed. The ways in which words even are put together is so unique. We have, for one, you know, just really on an academic level, we have these verbal shape classifiers that often land in the middle of words, and they describe the shape and our relationship to different things, whether something is, you know, what type of mass, whether it's water, whether it's hard or soft. For example, a chair, we just say chair in English. In Abenaki, we don't have a word that just means chair. We have an equivalent word, which is tasakwabon. And tas literally means a pawn. Ak is a shape classifier, which means something that is hard. And then abon is to sit. So it is upon something hard that we sit on, tasakwabon, a chair. You know, in every word, there's this really rich apkwasimon, which is animate, and it means pillow. Our pillow is animate. So obviously pillows have a spirit. They must have been very important to people long ago. So we learn in what's animate and what's not, kind of the, you know, what was seen as very important. And apkwasimon means that thing which we lay our head upon to dream. Kwasi is a dream. Apkwasimon. So in every description of every word, tree, for example, maskwa mozi is a blanket tree, literally, and that is the name of a paper birch or a white birch tree, which was used, of course, to cover the wigwams, the homes, the canoes, to make baskets, to blanket or cover things. So when we learn the language and know what the roots are, we really know how to speak, we gain a perspective that we can't gain without being you know, fully immersed in the language. And if we lose the language, then we really do lose that perspective. We lose that understanding. And the literal translations can give us a lot, but it can't give us the fullness of the conversation itself and how conversations work, which is just unique. Every language holds within it an entire understanding of the world. And when we lose a language, we have lost some of the diversity of human thought and human relation to the world. A lot of history can really only be understood through these words and through these terms and ways in which we relate to the world. So there's just so much. I mean, I could go on and on, and there's been a lot of mentioned. I think on another social level, it helps us identify ourselves as something unique, as something different. We look at Quebec and the Quebecois people and their use of French as a real sense of identity and pride. And I think we see that too being lost when Native communities lose their language, or just individuals in a Native community lose their language. Any Indigenous community, any community for that matter, they lose a sense of connection to that community and uniqueness. So on that level, it's extremely important as well.
I love that idea of a pillow having a spirit. I mean, you can sort of understand that intrinsically in a way. So, Jesse, before I let you go, would you mind teaching us a few Abenaki greetings, like, you know, hello, goodbye, things that you think people should know how to say, or ways to greet other speakers?
Yeah, the most beautiful way is pa'akunonguzian. Pa'akunonguzian.
Pa'akunonguzian.
Yeah, very good. Pa'akunonguzian. Nong means to appear. Pa'a means new, clean, or fresh. Ian is the way that you. And what you're saying to someone is, since I've seen you last, you appear to have grown or improved somehow. So the greeting is pa'akunonguzian. And it's showing that you recognize that growth in someone, which I think is so beautiful. Pa'akunonguzian.
I love that.
And to say goodbye, as in really in all languages, it's farewell or take care of yourselves, or you type phrases are used. One is uli nanawal mazi, which means good, uli nanawal, take care, mazi, of yourself. Literally, take good care of yourself. Uli nanawal mazi.
Uli Nana Walal Mazi. Tell me again.
Uli Nana Wal Mazi.
Uli Nana Wal Mazi.
Very good. Dagadata. You nailed it. Dagadata. you're a good ear. Yeah, those are a couple of a good greeting and a good departure. Uli Nana Wal Mazi. Take good care of yourself.
Well, Uli Nana Wal Mazi to you as well.
Ah, Uli Uni. Thank you.